Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
We've only got him for about 15 minutes, maybe less, because a vote's coming up. Congressman Ron Paul needs no introduction. Globally now recognized as the true leader of the liberty movement against collectivism and corruption. We've got a host of questions for him. Sir, gold is exploding. Silver is exploding right now. The Federal Reserve is monetizing now 70% of the debt. The dollar is plunging. Everything you've talked about is beginning to unfold. OPEC's talking about $200 a barrel oil. Is this the big event you've been talking about that we're beginning to see come into view?
Well, it's huge, and it has started, and whether it comes about and really is identified as the big event and everybody recognizes it within the next 30 days or so, I'm not positive. But I believe it is the beginning, but it's been going on. You know, you and others have been talking about commodity prices going up, but even Greenspan today had talk. He said, hey, we better keep an eye on this inflation. You know, but what he fails to see, as so many others fail to see, is inflation is when they print the money and create the credit out of thin air, and then the price increases come afterwards. So we've known there's been inflation. Now we're just looking for the bad results. So, yes, this is big, and that surge in gold today is a big issue. Today I was talking to staff, but I didn't say the price of gold was up. I said, well, the dollar was just further devalued, you know, against gold, which is the ultimate test. Devaluation is not good for anybody.
But when you grill Bernanke monthly in the banking committee, he almost sometimes does laugh when you talk about inflation. He acts like it's no issue, but the head of Walmart says that inflation is going to be very serious.
Well, I think it's further along than we realize. You've probably seen the stories about how the retail people are fooling the people for a while. At least they try, you know, to make the bottles a little smaller and put 15 ounces in a bag instead of 16 ounces and, you know, just cutting corners. But that is not the solution to inflation. The solution to inflation is not having a Federal Reserve run by somebody like Bernanke.
Shifting gears into the war, Obama didn't even approach Congress for even a flimsy authorization of force. I mean, that's clearly impeachable, but you've pointed out Bush did similar things. But, I mean, shouldn't even if Obama is a puppet congressman, shouldn't we move for congressional hearings to talk about these new wars that are being launched?
Well, it would be nice, but I think that we should have been doing this and demanding that we meet our responsibilities in the Congress 20, 30, 40 years ago. You know, every day it's less and less. You know, I was thinking about this government close down. You know, one of the downside of this, or at least we come out with the truth, let's say we close the government down, but and Congress no longer is functioning, and the government's not functioning, so to speak. But you know what? Government's going to continue to function. Do you think the regulators aren't going to regulate? Do you think the Fed's not going to print money? Do you think they're not going to bail out people? I mean, what it would point out is that Congress is truly irrelevant. You know, we've known it's been irrelevant with the war issue, but, you know, that would be, you know, a mixed blessing. It would point out the truth, but it would also indicate that we're in bad shape because Congress doesn't have much to say about what's going on.
Congressman, does this not set the clearest precedent ever? Under globalism, one world government, even Fox News has made that point, that the president then took orders from the UN in less than 48 hours, launched the bombardment of Libya?
Yeah, and they, you know, even Bush Sr. bragged about that. Remember, he didn't want to go to Congress. He came and got a token approval in 1990, 91, you know, for the Persian Gulf War. But he says he got his orders from the UN. He didn't need to go to Congress. He eventually did. And he even used the word. That was the first time I heard a president use the word New World Order. Anybody that used that had to be a conspiracy nut. But there, Bush was saying, well, this is what we need to do for the New World Order. And they used that, you know, of course, when they gave us the WTO. Oh, the New World Order is marching on. And the New World Order is certainly looking at this monetary crisis. We want, you know, the Constitution. We want sound money. We want gold money and honest money. At the same time, the internationalists are planning, you know, for their international fiat currency.
Stay there. Let's come back with that, Congressman. Quick break. We'll be right back.
The Genesis Communications Radio Network proudly presents War on for Your Mind.
right. We've only got 10 minutes with him once the bell rings for the vote. So we got Congressman Ron Paul joining us. Obviously, needs no introduction. We were just talking to him a few minutes ago. If he just joined us, we were raising this point of Obama becoming the first sitting president to be sitting on the UN Security Council as the head of it, violating Article 1, Section 9. Now, not even getting a token authorization of force or resolution from Congress, following UN orders to launch that attack in less than 48 hours. We were talking about this really being the biggest move yet for the New World Order. And then we were getting into, Congressman, how we want more liberty. We don't want dollar devaluation. We want Congress in control of currency and credit. But instead, the banksters you were mentioning, they want something else. They're openly calling now for a world government, an IMF, World Bank, Bancor, global currency. Can you speak to that, please?
Yes, and I think the evidence is mounting about our concerns about the dollar, you know, crashing. Prices are going up. They've been going up. But I thought it was very important today that Bernanke, you know, in his sweet talk, admitted that, prices are going up. We'll have to watch this very carefully in case we have to do something. Of course, all the damage has been done over the last 3 years because they doubled and tripled the money supply, and that's where the problem is. So they know what we know and what we talk about. They know that the dollars, the days are limited, and we plan and hope that we can restore constitutional money and hard money and sound economic policy. At the same time, the crisis that's coming, the new world orders, the world people, they see it as an opportunity to move one step forward. They go to war, and they go to war under NATO and United Nations, not by the Congress. But they want also, because ultimately the big one is control of the money. So they are making their plans to have a worldwide fiat currency, the IMF World Bank operations. But they have a long way to go because that still is fake money. It's fiat money, and they have to defy the marketplace. I mean, they may make the attempt, and they may be able to cause a lot of harm in the meantime. But ultimately, sound money wins out. Just hopefully we do our job and liberty wins out over the tyrants.
Congressman, looking at what's happening around the world and the French basically invading Ivory Coast, these moves into Libya with the special forces advisors there. I mean, I've even seen statements out of NATO and others that this is a great day for globalism, a great day for world governance, that now the UN, if rebels in any country rebel, the UN can pick and choose and decide whether to have a resolution to basically back the rebels and bomb them. I mean, that's really a flimsy face, in my view, over neo-colonialism.
Yeah, it's just a change, and it's not going to work for them, no matter how hard they try and how many temporary military victories they have. It's going to be a failed system. I think Obama has the worst policy conceivable. First, he goes in on his own under UN, and then he uses our force to intimidate him. And then he says, the American people must not like this, so I'm going to back off. There's no way that we won't be blamed for everybody getting killed over there because it'll be our weapons and our money, and if they need us, we're going to go back in. And already they do have our CIA agents in there, and we've handpicked a guy that lived over here for 20 years. We've sent him over. But it's messier than that. They can't iron this out. They think they've ironed it out in Iraq and Afghanistan, and they're nowhere close to it, even in Iraq. I think that's a terrible mess. But here we are over-assisting the rebels in Libya, and already it's well known that al-Qaeda has infiltrated the rebels in Libya. So they're doomed to fail, and the bankruptcy will bring us to our knees. Let's just hope we can put it back together in a lot better shape than we have it now.
Well, as you know, Congressman, and because you've cited his work quite a bit, Michael Scheuer, the former head of the Bin Laden program at the CIA, chief analyst, just 2 days ago on CNN, he said, look, you guys are putting out pure theater. So is Hillary. So is Obama. This is absolute garbage. There is al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda is the core of this group. And it turns out that even the guy trained in Virginia admits that he sent troops previously to Iraq to kill our soldiers. So we're told we got to be in Pakistan looking for 100 Al-Qaeda total in Afghanistan and Pakistan. But then you have thousands of admitted Al-Qaeda in the Maghreb there in North Africa, and they're now our allies. This is beyond 1984.
Yeah, no, it's total insanity. And the one thing we know, it will fail, but how many people are going to suffer in the meantime? But it will serve its purpose in many ways by bringing us to our knees. And some of them, you know, like the opportunity, they don't let emergencies go to waste. They take advantage of it, and that's why they think they can advance the New World Order and one world government under these conditions. But, you know, I think communications these days are such that our message is spreading, and I hope we're going to be very good competitors with the one worlders.
Obviously, even if you didn't get the nomination, it would be a great educational victory to have you in those debates. When are we going to be hearing an announcement, Congressman, on whether you're going to run for president or not?
Well, it can't be too far off. I would think in a month or so I'm going to have to make a final decision. Matter of fact, I may have to make a token decision on one debate. They're inviting potential candidates to go to South Carolina in May, and I'm pretty close to saying that I will come without a commitment to what I'm going to do in filing legal papers. So we're getting awfully close, and there are just a few other things that I have to iron out personally to make my final decision. But it has to come. None of the other major candidates have made that official announcement. I'm not quite sure.
Obama, that's all. Obama.
Yeah, Obama. He's the one that got out in front of everybody else. So I guess there aren't going to be any other candidates. Maybe the other Republicans are intimidated. Maybe they think they can't beat him now that he's a popular war president.
Well, you know, sir, you're going to win in the intellectual battle. I mean, the great educational engagement you did 3 years ago, I would guess, is going to be dwarfed. I'm a little worried about your safety. I think everybody should pray for you, also financially support you. I mean, obviously, I hope you're going to have some really good bodyguards because I believe you've got a chance to actually win, sir. And then you're going to have to publicly come out when they try to steal the nomination from you like they threatened Reagan with if he didn't put George Herbert Walker Bush on. Congressman Jesse Ventura was on here yesterday, former governor. Obviously, I'm sure you've heard his announcement that if you leave the Republican Party, he'd be happy to be your VP running mate. If you run for president, well, is it going to be as a Republican?
As of now, that's mainly what I've been thinking of. But I guess in life, you should always keep all options open. But right now, I'm still a Republican congressman, and we did it last time as a Republican. And, you know, there's a lot of people who get mixed messages from that because Republicans don't always stand for liberty, as you know. I parties are somewhat irrelevant to me, you know, whether I'm an independent, Republican, or Libertarian. I think there are vehicles for delivering a message. So right now I am working within the Republican Party.
Congressman, looking at the TSA, are there plans on congressional hearings? Multiple states are moving to try to bar the TSA, sticking their hands down people's pants, baking people in radiation microwaves. What are you doing to try to reverse that?
Well, one thing is that I feed a lot of information to Jason Chaffetz, who's the chairman of that subcommittee, and he is hot on that issue. He's a very good congressman. And he is outraged over it, as we all should be. And I think if people have examples, the bad examples, of it, that always helps. You know, visuals and pictures or anything, if they can either send it to him directly or to me, I think we can make use of that as a weapon because there will be hearings on this.
All right. In closing, building up towards an announcement to run for president, my gut tells me you're going to do it, sir, because you understand it's just too important to get the word out. What can listeners and Liberty supporters do to start getting their engines warmed up to give you the maximum support out of the gates when and if you make this announcement?
Well, you know, in a couple weeks, I think it's April 19th, I have another little book coming out. That might be a time for an explosion of interest. And the book does not make money for me. It goes into my foundation. So, but it's a message. It's a book talking about 50 issues dealing with, and it's called Liberty Defined. And coinciding that with an announcement could be interesting, even though those plans have not been made to do such. But it's something that people could be looking at.
Well, sir, thank you so much for spending time with us. Go to your vote, and God bless you, and Godspeed.
Thank you.
Well, I won't back down.
You know, in my film, Fall the Republic,
back down.
One of the many things we break down is that President Obama has brazenly violated Article 1, Section 9 of the U.S. Constitution by seating himself at the head of the U.N. Security Council, thus becoming the first U.S. president to chair the world body. And I remember we watched it live when it happened, when he took the month-long rotation on it. There at the UN, Kissinger was there in rapture, all these other globalists. They went on TV after and said this is a great day for the New World Order, a great day for globalism, that a president has now been in a dual capacity for a foreign quasi-government power. And they said 3 weeks ago, this is a great day with the UN resolution. Now 3 weeks and a day ago, and within 36 hours, Obama had taken UN orders and launched an attack without even consulting Congress. I mean, before it was a declaration of war, then it was the authorization of force, which is a token and unconstitutional, impeachable from my research. Now it's just, who needs a stinking Congress when you can have an emperor who takes orders from the UN itself? Now, Bruce Fein, if I go over his bio, it would take hours, but he's a lawyer specializing in constitutional international law, graduated from Harvard in 72. Bruce Fein served as Associate Deputy Attorney General from 81 to 82 as the General Counsel to the Federal Communications Commission under President Ronald Reagan. Fein was also top Justice Department official under Reagan administration. Fein has written numerous articles for the Washington Times, Slate, the New York Times. He's also worked for the American Enterprise Institute, Heritage Foundation, analyst, commentator, American Empire Before the Fall, published by Campaign for Liberty, June of last year. Other books, Constitutional Peril, The Life and Death Struggle of Our Constitutional Republic. Ron Paul, Constitution and Democracy. Ron Paul is among the most notable, consistent proponents of Mr. Fein's political commentary. Is quoted on the cover of Constitutional Peril saying, Bruce Fein is one of the most important legal minds of our time. Constitutional Peril is a must-read for American lovers of liberty. So when he talks, we need to listen. And, of course, Politico and countless other publications have gone with his report. GOP lawyer drafts Obama impeachment, and he's been circulating it in the halls of Congress this week. Hope he's got his life insurance up. He has a lot of courage. Certainly there's a lot of reasons to impeach him, but a lot of Republican leadership is involved in the treacherous constitutional malfeasance as well. That's why they went after Clinton for a sexual escapade, because that was limited to just that event. They don't want to get into missile secrets to the Chinese or things like that, because Republicans were involved as well. Bruce is really going after him on this, and we'll talk about the reasons he's moving for impeachment as a top legal mind. And then I've got a few other questions about other areas that I see that are impeachable. But Mr. Fein, thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
Well, you've got the floor. Tell us about your impeachment move, what it breaks down, where folks can read the text of it, and where we go from here.
Well, they can read the text of it. It's printed now on Politico website and some other websites, but that's the easiest way to find it. It's got over 8,000 hits already in just about a day. But let me go back to the founding. You know what we're going to do to honor the Republic. I'm speaking a little bit like James Otis and Sam Adams at the 1765 Stamp Act protest that said Americans were not going to reduce themselves to vassals to King George III. That we the people are sovereign, and that we're going to chart our own destiny. We're not going to have one individual or group of individuals tell us what's good for us, what's in the national interest, and flout the rule of law. And that's basically the precipice we're standing on today. It's not 1765 in the Stamp Act. It is Barack Obama stating that he can utilize our military offensively anytime he believes, in his viewpoint, it advances the national interest, whatever he thinks that is. In Libya, he says it's a humanitarian interest. All I can say is if that level of oppression justifies war unilaterally, we got about 80 countries standing right behind Libya. Start thinking about Zimbabwe, China, Chechnya, Burma, You know, you name it.
Mexico.
We'll be at war forever. And we'll be spending ourselves into further bankruptcy, which we can't afford. It'll mean secrecy. It'll mean suspending habeas corpus. We'll be put in detentions without trials, military commissions instead of civilian commissions. We'll have the greatest amount of invasion of privacy in the history of the United States. The Transportation Security Administration, you know, they'll be looking up every single crevice we've got. The president's decree. Anyway, the fundamental rule of law is at stake here. And the reason is the founding fathers were as explicit as they were in any other provision of the Constitution in writing in the Declaration of War Clause, which is assigned exclusively to Congress. Over and over again, at the Constitutional Convention, the ratification debate, the Federalist Papers explaining the Constitution, only Congress can authorize offensive use of warfare, because the entire history of mankind, the entire history of Europe, known to the founding fathers, was a history of executives running off and undertaking needless wars to aggrandize themselves.
Julius Caesar.
Politically. Julius, this is Caesar crossing the Rubicon and marching on Rome. That is exactly right. So we have as great a clarity in the meaning of the war clause as we do in freedom of speech, in the requirement that Congress tax and Congress spend. The president can't do that unilaterally. And yet, despite that clarity, the president has gone on and said, not only Libya, any other place that I think is the national interest, I will use war. Moreover, it was quite alarming yesterday. His Office of Legal Counsel, the Department of Justice, issued a paper that purported to justify constitutionally what he had done. And the paper says that the president has power to go to war offensively, unilaterally, to, quote, support the United Nations Security Council's credibility and effectiveness. Right? Not the Constitution, the United Nations Security Council. Now, the Supreme Court has held for over 50 years a treaty. A treaty cannot supersede constitutional requirements and stipulations, like only war can be authorized by Congress. So it doesn't matter what the UN Security Council says. The president can't do anything with regard to war or regard to taxes or regard to spending unless Congress has authorized it. So we basically have, looming on the horizon, an emperor. Exactly as you said, unlimited power, so whatever freedoms and liberties we enjoy, they are at the sufferance of the president. He can revoke them at any time he wishes. He doesn't mean go to the UN Security Council, well, get a resolution that says we have to suppress free speech in all countries of the world because it's dangerous to incumbents. Anything like that. Now, of course, these hypotheticals seem a little bit strained now because our political culture wouldn't tolerate that. But the president, nevertheless, will lie around like a loaded weapon. It's not going to go away in one day or 2 weeks or whatever. Maybe Obama might be so brazen in utilizing the absolute power this way, but what about a successor? What about our own Caligula rather than the Roman Caligula? They're going to come at some.
But they're already, sir, you're absolutely on target here as a top constitutional law scholar. They know what they're doing, but I saw that yesterday at whitehouse.gov reading that paper where they say the credibility of the UN, not the Constitution, not the law, not the war powers, the UN, but that's double-sided. This then is a direct assault on the power of Congress and hence the power of the American people and our system of checks and balances. So to making the UN credible, that then, if this precedent is allowed to be set through this new international model of governance, then practice, they believe, via the international common law, will bring it in, setting the precedent that now the Congress is basically ceremonial.
If you will. It's an adornment. It's ornamentation on the wall, but otherwise, president doesn't think he can get it through Congress. Okay, just go to the UN Security Council, trade off his veto, where he bargains with China and Russia and all these other great countries.
That means China and Russia and others have more authority than our Congress.
And remember this, even in regards to Libya, Obama consulted more with the Arab League than he did with our U.S. Congress. Now, has the Arab League ever paid a single tax to the United States, ever done anything for us, and he consults with the Arab League. That shows you how zany and dangerous this is. It's the end of constitutional government as a matter of principle.
Unbelievable. Bruce, fine, I should ask you, is there a website that's the best place to read your writings and find out about your books?
The Campaign for Liberty has a lot of them on there, but it's probably the easiest because I'm in the middle of building a new website now. If you just Google Bruce Fine, F-E-I-N, you get thousands of things, and that has a pretty good point.
All right, you've laid out the clear-cut, 100% case. They know under international administrative law they're just practicing this. Possession is 9/10 of the law. They are trampling the Republic. This, I said this 3 weeks ago, this is Julius Caesar crossing the Rubicon. I use the exact same analogy because that's what's happening. We see the French under UN pouring into the Ivory Coast, backing rebels, slaughtering innocents with machetes. I mean, clearly the global empire is setting the precedent where they finance rebels who rebel. Then this global empire invades its vassals, supply Hessian mercs, as Obama has supplied us. What response are you getting in Congress as you walk the halls? Because Republicans might try to impeach him over health care or something, but a lot of these Republicans, they like war. The military-industrial complex loves to fill their coffers.
Well, I think there's a concern, and I would say it's more visceral than cerebral about what the president has done. And you're right, but there are a fair number of freshmen who haven't quite got, you know, intellectually corrupted by those who have been in town so long that they see power in Congress or the executive branch always good because they can become lobbyists afterward and make huge sums, you know, helping their clients navigate their way through big government. But there's certainly a receptivity. There's a recognition. Yeah, it's wrong, but really, what should we do about it? And it's not all that different from Watergate, where I was around. That is, it took a while for the public's support and opposition to the idea, if the president does it, it's automatically legal, to push Congress to have Watergate hearings and ultimately the impeachment hearings leading to Nixon's resignation. And that's what's going to happen in this case. The members get it, but unless the populace writes in, emails, says, we've got to get rid of these guys, we need to have impeachment hearings, make them come up and explain on television before the entire public. Yeah, we can go to war to support the credibility of the UN Security Council, but not the United Nations, not United States Constitution. Make them do that, but that's only going to come if the population, the voters, get aroused. We cannot expect honor to be prevailing in the Congress, you know, principled adherence to the Constitution. Fear is what will move them, and fear of not getting elected and being criticized by their voters, that's what will get them to move on.
Mr. Fine, constitutional lawyer circulating articles of impeachment in the U.S. Congress, hopefully getting some traction on this, because this is the gauntlet being thrown down. Do you agree with me or with your legal gravitas? Correct me if I'm wrong, but Article 1, Section 9, dealing with the president swearing foreign oaths, serving foreign powers, foreign groups, clearly that is a big impeachable offense. If not, then he could go be, you know, vice president or premier, prime minister of Russia or Bangladesh, for that matter. And they were shaking with pleasure when Obama became the head of the Security Council on that one-month rotation. Never before had been done. Is that not an impeachable offense as well?
Well, it comes close, because what you're pointing out is the worry that the founding fathers had about divided loyalties. You know, they had seen that problem chronic in European countries, where people would be bribed and be serving two masters at the same time. And that's what that prohibition was about. You've got to be loyal only to the United States. You know, they had Benedict Arnold. You know, they had their traitors, and they had great loyalists like Nathan Hale as well. And it is very problematic any time. Anyone who's serving in the United States government, especially the president, has any official tie to any institution that is somehow unanchored to the United States Constitution. And what you've pointed out is there's only one oath that the president takes. It's to support and defend the Constitution of the United States, period. He has no loyalty to anything else. And that's right in Article 2. And then when he starts to assume offices or authorities that suggest that loyal to a treaty or to some other institution, the United Nations or anything else. That is a very, very, very serious problem.
And they know what they're doing. I mean, that was a test, a trial balloon. Now he has violated his oath brazenly, and I think you're right. This is the issue to go after him on, because it's so naked. Can you just briefly, when you get 5-10 minutes with a congressman spending days down there trying to educate them, or when you go to lunch with a group of congressmen and women, if you're talking, you know, to a congressman right now, and some of them do listen to this show, we've had them on as guests, and they've told us, if congressmen are listening right now, or if state legislatures are listening, they can put pressure. Citizens can put pressure on Congress people. If you had 2 minutes to address Congress right now, what would you say?
I would say your war power is every bit as much enshrined in the text of the Constitution exclusively as your power to tax and your power to spend. If you forfeit this power, you surrender it to the president, let him go to war at will, you're basically setting a precedent that enabled him to steal equally your power to tax and your power to spend. Moreover, the war power is perhaps most dangerous because it inescapably concentrates all power in the executive because of the natural patriotism of the people, the secrecy, the taxes. You will bankrupt the entire country. And that is what the founding fathers worried more about than anything else. Indeed, they said the most important provision in the entire Constitution for enshrining a republic was the requirement that only Congress could change us from a state of peace to a state of war. You could not have freedom in a state of constant warfare. And this is no time for summer soldiers and sunshine patriots. In the United States, the law is king. The king is not law. And if we ever forget that, the republic will have surrendered to an empire and we will all be reduced to vassals.
Absolutely. Very well said. Total veritas. And why not just make George Washington a king? It was offered to him. Why not just have a king? I mean, why don't we now have, you know, King George the 25th right now? You know, his great, 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 you know, progeny. Why not, if we're going to have this? And you've got this coterie of bureaucrats and internationalists and UN people now running the presidency. If this goes through, it is certainly the major signpost that our republic has fallen to the New World Order.
That is absolutely correct. And it's part of it. You know, maybe you could have some platonic guardian, some great enlightened leader, you know, Hammurabi, who will do great good. But there was one precept upon which this republic was founded. There's a dignity and thrill that comes from charting your own destiny. We may make errors, but we struggle with it ourselves. We are reduced to dwarfs if we are giving responsibility for our own lives and destiny to somebody else. It's a collective endeavor, but we would rather be free and mature and accountable for our own conduct than being some kind of serf to some all-knowing, omniscient, wise man. No, we don't want that. We don't want to be a slave. We don't want to be a master either.
Well, it's simple.
That's really the philosophy that is lost from this country. You know, we want and must decide for ourselves. You don't tell us, Mr. Obama, what's good for the nation. We are the nation. We will decide through our Congress whether we want to go to war. You don't tell us.
Okay, I think I'm in love right now. I got to have you back on a routine basis. Because this guy is just, when you talk to somebody who's done the same research you have times 10, it is just so wonderful. Because, folks, the truth will set us free. When we are put in the position of slaves, we begin to take on the manner of slaves. We need the responsibility of running our republic, not a bunch of crooks at the UN. Stay there, sir. Let's come back and talk about how we get this impeachment against this tyrant.
Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Well, this happens a lot. We tend to crash people's websites, even if they're on huge servers, but we're going to hopefully do that here today. We ain't got time to bleed.com is Jesse Ventura's new maiden website, full of inside scoop and his views on the world. I'm looking at the homepage right now on prisonplanet.tv. It's got dossier, appearances, declassified vault, Outpost. He's got letters to the ruling class right up there on the front page. The new book that just officially came out today is already making its way to the top of Amazon and the top of the New York Times bestseller list. If you want to support InfoWars.com, we have the book discounted out of the gates, available at InfoWars.com. 63 documents the government doesn't want you to read. And I've loved all his books, and I've read them all. From Don't Start the Revolution Without Me, to his latest book. But I got to tell you, this book is his most powerful, and it's a coffee table page turner. It's something to give somebody because it's all 63 documents that are public, that are declassified, that are admitted, but a lot of them nobody knows about. It's got the big ones like Northwoods and Paperclip, but it's got the others. At the bottom of the hour, we're going to walk through some of what Jesse thinks are the top 10 or so in the book, available at InfoWars.com or the website, weaintgottimetobleed.com. And he's here for just a week doing a limited tour, and then he's back to Mexico. We're going to talk about, will he run with Ron Paul for president? What's his view on his suit against the TSA and mounting resistance to it? We've got a host of things. Is his TV show coming back? I've got the inside scoop here, but he'll give it to you live on air for everybody out there. But before we go there, Governor, again, just want to welcome you to the airwaves and glad you're back in the U.S.
Well, it's great to be back, if only temporarily, and but I need to get back to Mexico quick because I'm losing my suntan.
I want to just run through a grab bag of laundry list of things before we get into the really big issues. You were telling me during the break you didn't know about Libya for a week. You didn't know about the earthquake for a week. Tell us what it's like down in Mexico and then your view on Libya, your view on the earthquake and the ongoing radioactive fallout.
Well, what people need to understand, when I go to Mexico, I spend 4 months down there. I live an hour from pavement and an hour from electricity. My house is completely solar. And I don't watch TV, and I call it flushing my brain out. I go down there, and I live a life where I only pay attention to what's within eyesight of me. And it's kind of nice, I'm 59 years old now, and it's kind of nice to do that every year because it kind of reinvigorates you. As you'll see, I'm reinvigorated right now, and when I permanently do come back to the U.S. in May, I'll be ready to roll even more. But I'm getting old now, so I got to take those breaks and go out on the water occasionally and enjoy the ocean and everything like it down there. And I really, in fact, I'll tell you this, Alex, my wife and I were considering applying for Mexican citizenship.
Really?
Yeah, now, and that doesn't mean I'm giving up my U.S. citizenship. You can have dual citizenship. But it would make, since I go down there so often, it would make life a lot easier crossing the border both ways if you're a citizen of both countries.
Well, it's obviously a beautiful country. I've been all over it, but it is, in many cases, a failed state. I've read the area you're in is a lot safer than other areas, but are you ever concerned about the country completely collapsing into bedlam?
I don't know, but maybe it needs somebody. If I become a citizen, Alex, that means I can run for office down there, doesn't it?
Ha! Oh, see, the governor of the Baja.
Or maybe president of Mexico.
Are you serious? I think they'd love you down there.
I say that tongue in cheek. You got to remember, I'm still just a big old gringo to those people down there, and I'm sure they would elect someone who was probably born and raised there.
Well, expanding on that, you've been outspoken about this, and all the experts that look at it agree. If they decriminalize drugs, the destabilization of Mexico would end overnight, but they don't want to decriminalize them because it just came out in Bloomberg, $376 billion in drug money laundered by Wachovia and Wells Fargo.
Really? No kidding. Well, if you tie it in to what happened in Afghanistan, when we went in, Taliban went into Afghanistan, they shut down all the poppy growers and the drug lords over there, and all that money gets channeled laundered right through the international banks, and maybe that played a major role in the bank downturn and the bailout that we had to do here in the United States, because they weren't getting their illegal drug money. And of course, now that the U.S. is back in there and our allies seem to be the drug dealers of Afghanistan, I guess the poppy business is up and running good again, and the banks are getting solvent again.
And your book does get into some of that as well, the 63 documents the government doesn't want you to read. Looking at the Libya situation, it turns out that Al-Qaeda, according to even the Washington Post, is the core of the rebels now being armed by the West, just like they armed them against the Serbs, just like the West armed them against the Russians.
Wait, Alex. If plan then.
Absolutely. Governor, what's your view?
I'm confused over that. I mean, that's ridiculous. I thought they were our enemy.
Well, it's like 1984. One day we're at war with them, the next day we aren't. But, yeah, we're fighting them in Afghanistan, Pakistan, Iraq, and the rebel leader even admits that he sent Al-Qaeda to Iraq to, quote, kill U.S. soldiers. That was the headline last week, but now he's our gallant little ally. What do you think's happening in Libya? Maybe the trillions in oil?
Oh, absolutely, it's got to do with oil. You know, if you look at what we enter into, and I made this statement, too. I said, unfortunately, young men and women that join our military today, they're not really defending us. What they are, they're the strong arm for big multinational corporations. And it's been going on for years and years. If you read the memoirs of General Smedley Butler, the two-time Congressional Medal of Honor winner who died in 1940, he said that's the way it was way back in the teens and 20s, that the Marine Corps essentially worked for the United Fruit Corporation, and when Central and South American companies wouldn't cooperate, they sent in the Marines. So, you know, it it hurts me and pains me to say that, being a United States veteran, that, you know, it seems that our military doesn't really work for us. They work for whatever the corporations want them to do.
Well, that's four wars now, and on the Ivory Coast, the rebels admittedly have killed 1,000 innocent people, so the French have now invaded on the west coast of Africa to back up the rebels overthrowing the government. This looks like the start of an invasion of the African continent to me.
I don't know. You know, they're obviously, you know, they know things that they're certainly not letting us know, and I suppose we'll have to go on another document search to try to figure out what exactly they are doing. You know what I found unbelievable doing this book, Alex? Do you know how many documents the United States government last year classified top secret?
I know it's got to be in the hundreds of thousands.
Try 16 million.
Whoa.
I mean, that's got to be every document the government puts out. 16 million documents were classified top secret.
Well, you notice that Obama promised to have the most transparent government ever, and now he's had more secret meetings at the White House, classified more stuff than even Bush.
I'll tell you what else he's doing that is actually worse than Bush, too. He's being harsher on whistleblowers than Bush is. Eric Holder is way more harsh on whistleblowers than even the Bush administration was.
And they're continuing the torture, the secret arrest. He just reauthorized the Patriot Act.
Oh, that is unbelievable. I mean, we cover that in the intro of my book. This thing violates our Constitution in a half a dozen places. And yet, why does our country, and where's our Supreme Court here? You know, our country was set up, the forefathers, so that a president and a Congress cannot simply pass a law and have it supersede the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. You've got to go through hoops. You've got to change the Bill of Rights and the Constitution, and that itself requires ratification by two-thirds of the states. None of this is being done. They're violating our Constitution so bad, they ought to go to jail.
Well, I agree with you. In fact, we saw Obama not even consult Congress 3 weeks ago when they got the United Nations resolution for the bombardment, the so-called no-fly zone. And we know U.S. and British special forces have been in there the whole time. Since when does the president not even consult Congress? Before, at least Bush would get some type of authorization of force.
Well, you know, but even that they do after the fact. You know, they passed that law way back in the 70s, and they're violating the hell out of it. Well, I'll tell you what, Alex, when I'm in Mexico, I don't even call us the United States of America anymore. Do you know what I refer to us as? The fascist states of America. Everybody in this country thinks we're going socialist. No, we're not. We're fascist. Because the basic definition of fascism is when corporations and organized religion team up to control the government.
Thank you.
I've noticed how they're making it all about cutting unions and cutting spending, which is great. But all the economists I've interviewed have pointed out the $1.5 quadrillion in derivatives. If we don't say no to Wall Street's trillions of debt they've created that they've gotten government to sign on to and bail out, then there's no way we could cut everything and it wouldn't even pay for a fraction of the debt that we've been signed on to.
Well, I get a laugh out of it that you got all these Republican and these new governors out there that are literally destroying the unions, the public unions and all that stuff, and laying the financial blame on them. What, because some union asked for a dollar more an hour? Give me a break. And yet nobody on Wall Street has gone to prison over this mess, and yet they're going to now shift the blame and try to make the public believe it's unions that are at fault.
Exactly, and we've got a leg chopped off, and the media is focusing in on a hangnail.
Exactly. That's a good way to put it. They're focusing in on a hangnail, and we got our leg chopped off. A good way to say it.
Well, but you're absolutely right, Governor, that this is a bait and switch. I'm not even saying that these unions, some of them aren't, a little bit entitled.
Well, of course. You got to understand, unions can get overbearing, too. But I'll tell you what, if you want to destroy the middle class, destroy the unions.
And they've done that, and the middle class is falling apart, and now the unions are basically just Democratic Party attack dogs to collect dues for them.
Exactly. And they're not even honest, because I can give you a complete example on that end. When I ran for governor of Minnesota, May Shunk, my lieutenant governor, and I were the only two vested union members in the race, and we didn't get one union endorsement.
Yeah, the unions...
So I went right to the Democrats.
The unions were taken over from within a long time ago. Governor Ventura, let's get into...
Let me add, not the union itself, just the union leadership. Because I went to one union meeting where the rank and file voted I was there to endorse me, and yet their leadership threw that out, and the endorsement went to Skip Humphrey.
So they've taken over the full spectrum of the Republicans and Democrats and all these major institutions that were set up to serve the people in our interest. Now we've got special interest. Let's talk about your Good Morning America interview where you kicked off your tour this morning. The headline is Vice President Ventura. Clarify your position. I know Ron Paul's going to see this or hear this later. Many other congressmen are actually tuning in right now because they've told me they listen at lunch at the Capitol. Tell your message to Ron Paul dealing with the fact that you're willing to run as his vice president.
Well, wait a minute now. I never said who would be president or vice president. Ron and I may have to flip a coin. I just said I would run with him. But no, I'm just having fun with you, Alex. No. In fact, this book, 63 Documents the Government Doesn't Want You to See, if you look at it, I dedicated the book to Congressman Ron Paul. And I did that because he was the only congressman we have that had the courage to go out on the floor of the Congress and support WikiLeaks. Ron Paul said, he said, nobody's died from WikiLeaks. How many people have died from the trumped-up intelligence and the lying that got us into the Iraq war? And then he said something even more profound, and that was this. He talked about, in a free country like ours, when the truth equals treason, we're in big trouble. And that's what, in essence, they're saying. If you tell the truth, you're guilty of treason. And I'll tell you, if that's the prevailing thought in this nation today, we are hurting. And so, no, I just said that if Ron Paul would quit the Republican Party, because I will not run as a Democrat or Republican, I want nothing to do with these parties. They are the problem. They are not the solution. They're the ones that have been in control of this country, like Ralph Nader calls us the two-party dictatorship. They are the ones that have us in this mess. They are the ones that have caused all the debt problems. Everything falls to the Democrats and the Republicans, and it's time to throw them out. The people of this country can do a major thing, and it's so easy. It's as clear as the nose on your face, but most people can't see it. The old cliche, you can't see the forest for the trees. The next election, don't vote for any Republicans or Democrats. That would be the greatest thing that could happen in this country. We'll be right back.
Austin, Texas, broadcasting worldwide. It's Alex Jones.
Well, the book by New York Times bestselling author Jesse Ventura with Dick Russell, 63 documents the government doesn't want you to read. We're going to segue into the book, which, again, I'm not just hyping this. This is the book to give somebody to wake them up, because it's 63 documents, and it's like eating popcorn. You want to go to the next one, the next one, the next one, and you just learn more and more, and there's the 100% proof. This is not speculation. The book is available at Infowars.com, discounted out of the gates, or call 888-253-3139. You can also get Mark Dice's new book, Big Brother, The Orwellian Nightmare Come True, with it. When you get the two books together, you can get one of my films free, whichever film you choose, at Infowars.com. Now, getting into the TSA, think about it, folks. Now they're announcing all from Tennessee to New York, National Guard, TSA, Viper teams, federal marshals, bus stations, highways, train stations, sticking their hands down pants there. That's all over the news. 9,000 locations, Mall of America, Walmarts, putting in big telescreens. And we've now got footage. We've now shot footage of these going in, saying, watch your neighbors. Don't trust people. That's directly out of 1984. When I watched the mid-80s film, written by Stephen King, that's so powerful, The Running Man, with Jesse Ventura and Schwarzenegger, when they're creeping around in the city, Schwarzenegger is trying to, you know, hide out from Ventura, you see big billboards saying, hey kids, October is bonus recruitment month, report a family member and get a double bonus. This is directly out of 1984, and now they've set the precedent to stick their hands down your pants. They've done it to Ron Paul. They say that he's been groped. They've grabbed his genitals. We've had guests on where they go in the pants and they admit this. And I've had district attorneys, the one from San Francisco, on saying he's got officers in there. If he sees them doing it, he's going to prosecute them, because a cop can't pull you over and stick their hands down your pants unless it's an emergency. How does the TSA? So, Governor, I want to finish up with your lawsuit, but then I want to ask you, what do you think of the expansion to TSA on the streets, where you pull up to a checkpoint and they want to now drive you under radiation machines? And they admit that they haven't calibrated the machine, and it's many times more radiation than they'd first said. Governor, breaking down your lawsuit.
Well, again, Alex, the other thing that's interesting about my lawsuit, and again, it's only for me, you know, and I am stating that it is, I pose no threat, and therefore they're violating my Fourth Amendment. But here's what's interesting. Certain members of our elected people, and I'm not talking the president here because he's got his own plane, but certain members of our elected, they don't have to submit to this. Speaker of the House does not have to submit to what you and I have to. Now, I challenge, and I don't know for sure, maybe you can help me, but I know Nancy Pelosi never served in the military. I don't think Boehner did either, did he?
No.
Okay, how are they more patriotic than me when I gave 6 years of my life to the United States Navy? Those two have never given their life, put their life on the line in the military yet. They aren't subjected to these searches, but Jesse Ventura is.
Well, Governor, you're absolutely right, but more than just the fact that Pelosi and Obama, they're now... Absolutely, Boehner, and as many as 50 members of the House and Senate are now exempt. They've been videotaped just being waved around security. Here's my question. Is this not bona fide two-tier class system where they are exempt from their own bureaucracy that they're foisting on us, Governor?
Oh, absolutely. You want to hear another good one, Alex? Initially, I was going to sue under the Federal Disabilities Act. Right? Because
yes,
of the metal in my body, I'm disabled. And that says they're to accommodate my disability. Well, what's happening is they're exploiting my disability. Get this. 1 week later, my attorney calls me back and says, we can't sue under the American Disabilities Act. And I said, why not? He goes, it doesn't apply to the federal government.
Unbelievable.
So and I said, what? I said, how can they pass laws that apply to all of us in the private sector and they don't have to abide by the very laws they pass? My attorney laughed and said, oh, there's quite a few laws like that. I said, I'm outraged over that. We need to pass a law that says they can't do that, that any law they pass for us, the citizens, the government likewise has to abide by it.
Well, here's an example of that. Obama has now handed out thousands of waivers to McDonald's and their hundreds of thousands of employees alone, but to thousands of companies that are campaign donors, they get a waiver and don't have to buy health insurance, but your hamburger place or your restaurant next door, you've got to buy the insurance. That's a true form of economic discrimination here, where the imperial federal government hands out favors to those that basically bribe them.
It's horrible. It's horrible, Alex. And like I said, I would love to get on TV with John Boehner and ask him point blank, how are you more patriotic than me?
Well,
and let me add this. When I won mayor, Alex, and when I won governor, you then acquired the title honorable. Well, an honorable person should not have to be searched, should they?
Well, as American citizens under the Fourth Amendment, we all are honorable and innocent until proven guilty. But now 99% of us are guilty until proven innocent. But if you're a big shot currently in government, you're then exempt. I mean, that's classical tyranny.
Yeah, and the thing that why most people aren't perturbed over this naturally is because, you know, like in the old days for me, I could pass through the metal detector by simply taking all the metal out of my pockets and putting on the thing, and you're on your way. But in the case of anyone that's had prosthesis surgery like I have, and you have metal in your body, you're now discriminated against because you had to go get surgery so you could survive.
Well, what about the guy with the urine bag that they pulled off his body, his medical prosthesis? What about, I've seen it, I would imagine you fly a lot, you've seen it, where old ladies that can't walk are made to get up out of their wheelchairs?
Yeah, I mean, it's absurd. It's utterly, and you know what's interesting, Alex? Who if they caught? You know if they caught someone, it would be headlines.
Well, you know they got the underwear bomber. The U.S. government ordered him to be allowed on the plane.
Yeah, exactly. And who have they caught? Nobody. Nobody. I mean, do they really think the terrorists are going to attack us in the identical same way? I mean, when I was in SEAL Team, we were trained never to do anything alike. You know, when you go in one way, you come out another way if you can. Like in the daytime, if you run ops at night, you always test fire your weapons every day. That way you're not setting any pattern. If you only test fire your weapons on the day you're going out on an op, well, that becomes easy to predict then. So you test fire your weapons every day. That way you don't set patterns. And do they really believe that terrorists are so stupid they try the same thing again, if indeed the terrorists actually did it?
Well, Governor, does this not set the precedent, though, that they can put federal forces on highways, at bus terminals, at train stations, at airports, under this omnipresent threat? And then we learn that Anwar al-Awlaki, Fox News headline in October, the number two in al-Qaeda, meeting secretly at the Pentagon while he is on the wanted list. Did you see that report?
No, I did not. Not at all.
If guys put that Anwar al-Awlaki dined secretly at the Pentagon report up, and that got leaked and they confirmed it was real. I mean, Governor, you've talked about 9/11, the explosives clearly in the towers, all the evidence of that. I mean, more and more, 9/11 is the pretext to destroy our liberties.
And you know what's interesting? Now we can segue to the book a little here, Alex. We print the NIST report on Building 7, where they admit it. They admit Building 7 was demoed. You know how they admit it? They said that it went into total freefall for this many seconds. Well, then it had to be demoed because otherwise they're defying Newton's law of gravity physics. The only way a building like that can go into total freefall, which it says in the NIST report, is to have all resistance removed. And the only way you can remove the resistance is through demolition.
Well, you're absolutely right. And for 8 years, they tried to say that there was no free fall until the videos forced them to prove the fact that it did fall.
They could prove it. They could put it on the stopwatch. The building fell as fast as I would jump out of an airplane in free fall. And the stopwatch will tell you that.
You are obsolete, Mr. Wordsworth.
Lie. No man is obsolete.
You have no function, Mr. Wordsworth. You're an anachronism, like a ghost from another time.
I am nothing more than a reminder to you that you cannot destroy truth by burning pages.
You're a bug, Mr. Wordsworth, a crawling insect, an ugly, misformed little creature who has no purpose here, no meaning.
I am a human being.
Words, Mr. Wordsworth, that have no substance and no dimension, like air, like the wind.
I don't care. I tell you, I don't care. I'm a human being. I exist. And if I speak one thought aloud, that thought lives, even after I'm shoveled into my grave.
Delusions, Mr. Wordsworth. Delusions that you inject into your veins to make you think you have a strength when you have no strength at all. You have nothing but spindly limbs and a dream, and the state has no use for your kind.
Resistance to tyrants is obedience to God. It's Alex Jones.
Read some of the 63 documents that are in this book and that are broken down. I mean, you talk about a well-written book. This thing 100% proves just how criminal the shadowy organizations that Fletcher Prouty wrote about and just how out of control and hubris-filled they are. You have our scandalous post-war history. That's 11 of the documents. Government, military, and corporate secrets. That's another 15 documents or so. Shady White House, another 10 documents. You've got Part 4, 9/11, a think tank anticipation of 9/11, FBI knowledge of terrorist training at flight schools, Bin Laden determined to strike in U.S., Bush told, lied about it, the Pentagon stand-down order, the free fall Building 7, evidence for insider stock trading, the FBI's briefing on trading and the 9/11 commission. Then you go into the war on terror and another 13 documents there and then an epilogue. I mean, Jesse, I've never, and I'm not just saying this because I didn't say this about your other books and they were excellent, I've never seen a book this jam-packed, busting at the seams. One of these points discredits this shadow government COG system. You've got 63 of them, and the way you put them together, everybody has got to get this book and give it to doubting Thomases that they know. Jesse, you have engaged in a quantum leap with this book. I mean, I don't think anybody's ever put something together like this.
Well, you know, I'm very proud of it. You know, Dick Russell and I worked extremely hard, and really Dick deserves the great credit on the research, because you know me, I'm not going to sit down with the patients to research all this. So my partner, Dick Russell, that's why we're a great team. Dick is phenomenal at doing this research. He finds the documents, then he presents them to me. And, of course, I get shocked when I read the documents. And then, of course, the book is me commenting and writing about the documents. But as I said, every document is reprinted in this book. So the reader doesn't have to take my opinion on it.
This should be required reading in every high school, every university, every police chief, anyone who's ever been in denial. The way it's so well written, the way it's so well blurbed and factoided on each piece, starting at page 38, you've got Operation Northwoods, or actually Document 38, and then you turn the page. That's the U.S. government plan to stage 9/11 style attacks. Then, once you've read that document, you get to something that we first found and dug out in 2004 and put in my film Martial Law. You have the stand down order to Cheney. Given over to Rumsfeld to change NORAD's preparation to shoot down errant aircraft. You were trying to get to that, Governor. Break it down.
Well, what it is simple. On June 1st of 2001, up until that point, all air defense was left up to the base commanders, that if the FAA called them and said, we have a problem in the air, the base commander could make the call and scramble the jets. Well, on an executive order from George Bush, June of 2001 rescinded that order, and it stated that no planes could be scrambled Donald Rumsfeld not answering the phone. Well, if you go to the records of 9/11, for a couple of hours, no one could locate Rumsfeld.
And Cheney was hiding out in the bunker and lied and said he got there 45 minutes later than he had. But Norman Panetta, the head of transportation, confirmed in 5 separate interviews and before Congress that Cheney was lying about being in there and saying the order still stood to basically not shoot down Flight 77 coming into the Pentagon. And here is the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff order for the stand down from June 1st, issued under the vice president's orders through Rumsfeld. And then right after 9/11, they rescinded their previous order and went back to the old shoot down directive where the generals didn't have to get authorization before they shot down an errant aircraft. And they were begging that day, let us shoot them down. But they wouldn't give them the order.
Well, you know, what can you say? It's as clear as the nose on your face. And, you know, and like I said, for those that doubt, read it yourself. You know, you can read the orders yourself and you'll see what happened. And, you know, the other thing that really, the document that really bothered me too, Alex, is the first one. The CIA secret assassination manual. Now, assassination is just a nice word for first-degree murder. Because it's pre-planned and it's generally politically inclined. Now, how can our government have a manual, a printed manual, on how to commit first-degree murder when, as far as I know, murder is illegal in every country in the world? And yet we have a manual. And wait till you read this thing, all your viewers out there, if they read it. I mean, it tells, you know, what type of person they'll recruit to do the murders, what his mindset should be. One of the ones, you almost laugh at it. Like they say, throwing people off of buildings or high places is excellent because there's so much plausible denial.
Now, look, I tend to think I know it all, but the older I get, I know how much I don't know. Reading your book, we got it 3 weeks ago, but couldn't start shipping it until this week. I couldn't put it down. I ended up staying up till about 3 in the morning, started at about 9 at night, wasn't done till 3 in the morning, reading the whole book. And there were a lot of documents that I'd never seen. I went and looked them up on the National Archives, and there they were, declassified. This is a literal Rosetta Stone to understand the criminal pathology of this Anglo-American secret team rogue network group that Fletcher Prouty wrote about. And talking to you 4 or 5 months ago, the last time you were on, Governor, you talked about Prouty and his view into the world. And I see a lot of Prouty's understanding overall, almost like his spirit is hanging over this book.
Well, I hope so, because to me, Fletcher Prouty, Colonel Prouty, was a great American. You know, he served his country honorably, and he saw what things were wrong, and he wasn't afraid to come out and write about them, even though his one book, The Secret Team, back in 72, when he initially printed that one, it was censored. Every time they do a printing, the U.S. government would buy up every copy.
63 documents in full with all of the supporting documentation. Very well written. 63 documents the government doesn't want you to read at InfoWars.com. Get it out to everybody. Unlock minds.
He's the T-Rex of political talk. Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
Let's not waste any time going directly to our live interview via video connection from their headquarters with Lyndon LaRouche of LaRouchePack.com. Lyndon, I want to get into your 40 years or so of diagnosing the global banking cartel, the Rockefellers, the Rothschilds, their plan, their stated plan to get the world basically into debt, to get the planet to sign on to these fraudulent debts. And then on the ashes of that, to basically bring the world into debt slavery, their own statements from the UN, the head of the Goddard Space Center, the White House science czar, John P. Holdren, to have a, quote, post-industrial world. Now, when I woke up 18, 19 years ago, doing my own research into the globalist, I discovered these same documents, these same statements. Then I found later your work that had been going on for decades before, accurately breaking down just exactly what their plan was, a Malthusian new dark age to shut down development, to shut down any competition to their hegemonic rule. So briefly, sir, for those that don't know who you are or who have heard the media describe who you are, in your own words, what is LaRouche PAC? Who is Lyndon LaRouche? And then let's get into our foe, the globalists, the program, where we are now, what their plan is, and how we can counter them. Because everything you talked about 30, 40 years ago, we're now at that point. We're now entering that prime zone. All the other great staged events of the past were only preludes to it. Lyndon LaRouche.
Well, I was, of course, a Franklin Roosevelt man from the time of military service during World War II. And I came back to the United States from overseas to find that everything had changed under Truman as compared to Roosevelt. Now, Truman was a stooge, actually, for Winston Churchill and company. And during this period, there's been a seesaw battle between the American patriot and those who prefer the British system. Well, the British system is not what most people think it is. It actually is a continuation of the Roman Empire based on the concept of monetarism. In other words, it's not the really colonies, it's monetarism. Whereas we, in our system, establish a credit system, not a monetary system. Our credit system, in which our dollar, as uttered, was used to finance projects which were worthwhile for us and for other purposes of our nation. Whereas in Europe, has still been under the same old system of monetarist rule, which has actually been a heritage of Europe since the Roman Empire. So the struggle has been, and we came over here to establish a nation here during the beginning of the 17th century on the assumption that we had to have a separate place to bring the best of European civilization into a new territory, the Americas, and to build up here a form of nation state which was opposite to the British Empire and similar kinds of imperial ideas. We have been in a continuous war since that time, since our revolution and even before that, since 1763. We've been in a continuous war against this imperialism. And we, unfortunately, when you talk about Wall Street or the Boston banks, you're talking about really a branch of the British Empire. And right now, you see, we're being destroyed through the Federal Reserve System, which is now a creature of the British Empire. We are with tens of trillions of dollars of worthless debt. These are gambling debts. This is not legitimate debt.
Isn't it really, I mean, to boil it down in layman's terms, a form of neo-feudalistic serfdom? Their entire stated goal, if you read what the founders said, if you read what other presidents, this was always the fight. It was about this monetarism where they use debt in a debt black hole system that's impossible to ever pay back, that they create out of nothing to make us basically sharecroppers or debt slaves.
Well, in that sense, it's true. I would have a explication of what this is a little more complicated, but that's essentially true.
Okay, continuing. You were getting into derivatives and what happened in 99, the end of Glass-Steagall. I mean, I had many economists on at the time that said this is going to create hundreds of trillions in debt. It's going to allow this inner coterie to take over. Then when they implode it, they're going to roll out their new global currency. Exactly that is now happening.
Well, what you have to look at is look at the assassination of John F. Kennedy. Kennedy, together with Douglas MacArthur and others, were opposed to the United States being engaged in a war in Indochina. The thing was, we are not going to fight a land war in Asia, a protracted land war in Asia. Now, Kennedy stuck to this, guns on this, and the guns came after him. They killed him. Now, what his successor was not a bad person, but he was scared as the devil, Johnson. And therefore, Johnson went along with a war which Kennedy would have opposed had he lived. Then you had Kennedy's brother, Robert, was about to be nominated as president via the Democratic ticket. And he was killed. And then we got a new process in which this British system took over. We had 1968, the change in the financial system. We had 1971. The British Empire replaces the dollar. And we've been looted ever since then. We had the 68ers, who were actually an anarchist fascist movement. And I saw these guys firsthand. They were a fascist movement. And that tendency, typified by Mark Rudd and company at Columbia and elsewhere, has taken over more and more of the control of the baby boomer generation and has shaped the destiny of our country. So we have been corrupted by these and related methods at the same time that in 1971, at the same time we shut down the fixed exchange rate system, the British Empire came back in with the Inter-Alpha Group under Jacob Rothschild. This Inter-Alpha Group is what is controlling the international monetary financial system of the world today.
What is their end-game goal? What are we currently witnessing?
You're looking at the face of pure evil. And you might call it the British Empire, but you have to say, what's wrong about the British Empire? You say, well, we know some people from Britain. They're not like that. Their system is not doesn't have to be like that. But we find that the monetarist element, which is actually what's called the New Venetian Party, William of Orange, who carried the thing into Britain.
The black nobility, the city of London, in London.
That's part of it. That's part of it.
Continue.
So the problem we have is the Asian part of the world is not in bad shape politically as we are, but the transatlantic part of the world is in terrible shape. Now, take the case of this shutting down of the government of the United States. Think of the implications of shutting down the government in a fit of pique. What should be done is putting through the Glass-Steagall Law immediately. That will get rid of the trash, the tens of trillions of trash money, of gambling debts. With that money released, we could restore the functioning of our states. Now, and obviously the intention is to destroy the United States by a Europe-centered organization, which is essentially what we call the British Empire. And that's what's happening. We're being destroyed by an enemy, which is a London-centered financial imperium.
Well, Lyndon LaRouche, again, joining us right now. I concur with your analysis of the historical facts. I mean, when you talk about British coming in and taking over 1922, Council on Foreign Relations, openly infiltrating the media, setting up this system. It's more of a system than, you know, so much the British themselves, but that's where a lot of the power, as you were saying, is centered, but also in the continent of Europe. And I want to go to a quote from Thomas Jefferson that I read in the last hour, and I want to get your take on this quote. We can put that up on screen. I believe that banking institutions are more dangerous to our liberties than standing armies. If the American people ever allow private banks to control the issuance of their currency, first by inflation, then by deflation, the banks and the corporations that will grow up around the banks will deprive the people of all property until their children wake up homeless on the continent their fathers conquered. The issuing power should be taken from the banks and restored to the people to whom it properly belongs. Thomas Jefferson.
Defending the Republic from enemies, foreign and domestic. It's Alex Jones.
We're going to get Lyndon LaRouche's forecast on where he sees the global economy going, what he expects the globalists to pull, including staged terror attacks, the police state grid. Bretton Woods 2 convenes tomorrow, actually this evening, kicks off with George Soros calling for an end to the dollar. What does he think is really going to happen on that front? Because this British model wants to start this new Bancor global currency. Now, racing through a host of questions here, Mr. LaRouche, what is the larger stratagem, the geopolitical Brzezinski-esque model from my research through the British divide and conquer system? What is going on in the Middle East? We've got intel that they're planning to overthrow the monarchs as well, though they are corrupt. What's part of that larger plan, or do you not agree? And what do we expect to see as the ace in the hole moves by these people as they attempt to maneuver us into this one world government, the born again, expanded British Empire model?
Well, what you're looking at is the famous mythical story about the case of the Zeus and Prometheus, that the policy of the empire, the imperial system, in the Mediterranean and spreading out from the Mediterranean was always based on this aspect of policy. That's what generated it. The idea was is to keep the majority of people stupid. Don't educate them. Keep them as slaves. And don't let the people become too numerous. Now, as you know, the World Wildlife Fund, which is an extension of this, which is, of course, a British operation, says that we want to reduce the world's population from the order of 7 billion of people to less than 2. What we're seeing now is the implementation or attempted implementation of that policy to reduce the world population, including that proportionately of the United States, to that level, and to create such a state of chaos in the world that the empire can continue to rule over us. That's really what is in the mind. And when you look at the World Wildlife Fund and similar kinds of institutions, which are the British monarchy, then you see explicitly that is the bottom line intention.
And by the way, everything you say is so backed up with history. It was Prince Philip and his cousin, Prince Bernhard, who set it up. It's openly a eugenics arm. They conservatively want to get rid of 60. Others say 80%. And in all these UN biological diversity assessments and in the Henry Kissinger State Department Memorandum 200, they're criminal, Nazi-like. And we know the Nazis were just a spinoff of their eugenics ideas, started again in England with the Galtons. Again, it's all history. They are openly declaring war on civilization, war on humanity, war on true information. This is a scorched earth policy, and it's stated by them publicly. They are openly admitting their treason against humanity. What specifically, though, from your research, what's happening in North Africa and the Middle East?
What you're seeing there is a phenomenon which is actually quite a lawful phenomenon. It's called the mass strike, in which you have a spontaneous eruption among people. We're seeing this particularly in the generation between, say, 25 and 45, where the usual concentration is now. It was that case in Egypt. Was that in Tunisia? It was that which is going on in Libya, or is being made a mess of now, but it's what's going on in Madison, Wisconsin. It's what's going on in other parts of the United States. You're getting a reflection of this, which we saw in one form in August of 2009. Now we're seeing the same thing extended as a more or less globally spreading mass strike movement. It's a spontaneous movement, not an organized one. There are organized elements, but it's spontaneous. As we see, for example, in the United States, look at teachers. Now, the characteristic of teachers is they believe in children. They believe in building the future for children. So you find the leadership of opposition to the Republican Party, clowns, as well as the Democratic clowns. You see, the opposition was being led by teachers together with some of their students from the high school age. And this is a spontaneous revolt against evil by people who do not fully understand what the problem is, but they know that they have to stand up and fight against it.
Mr. LaRouge, looking at this, though, the dominoes were set up because of dollar devaluation, food prices increasing in these third world countries where, on average, roughly half the population makes about $2 a day or less. Clearly, the ingredients were there through IMF and World Bank policy, so they knew what they were doing. But then they send in Western agitators to try to tip the dominoes themselves so they can control the outcome with Mubarak, with Gaddafi, with all of these people. I mean, clearly the people have a reason to be angry and to be standing up. But I see the establishment trying to basically herd these movements towards an outcome that they want, which is further destabilization of the Middle East. Do you not see that there from your research?
Not the same way. The point is, you had the case of the French Revolution. 1782, the French king made a mistake. And his mistake was oppressive for the people of France. When the French monarchy refused to admit that it was being manipulated by the British with a wrong policy, the French people became angrier and angrier and angrier. And they then exploded when Lafayette lost his nerve in declaring the action, which he should have done. You had the unleashing of madness. The danger now is that if we do not create order in society by restoring justice, which is what the situation is always in these situations, if we do not act to restore justice, you'll get chaos. That's what we're headed toward.
But the social engineers, going back to the Rand Corporation 15 years ago, openly said that we were going to be an undemocratic society, that they were going to vertically integrate, that they were going to put federalized police, standardized training worldwide, threat fusion spying centers in place, that terror attacks would be used as the pretext to smokescreen this police state suppressive rollout. So they know their policies are going to generate this. Then they plan to use the rebellion as a pretext to then openly bring out their martial law grid. Your take on that?
We could beat them, but we have to be smart. We could beat them. Just the idea of fighting a war, of fighting any kind of a battle, can be a mistake. You've got to have a good strategy. And I think now what I read as the situation, we're on the verge of a crisis beyond belief. You have two crises together. On the one hand, you have this financial, monetary, economic crisis. On the other hand, you have a wave of crises in terms of what happened in Japan, what happened in South New Zealand, in Christchurch, what is going to happen on the coast of the Pacific, of the United States, what is happening around the world. You're going to see a pattern of earthquakes over the coming 2 years or so, which beats anything in human experience today. Why I say that is we're in a cycle, and the cycle is determined by our galaxy, not the solar system as such. We're in a 62-billion-year cycle, which is well known to people who study these matters. This is a period in which the greatest rate of perturbation is likely. So we're on the verge of a crisis of humanity beyond belief unless we take the proper action. And this president is shutting down the means of detection by which we can be organized to defend ourselves against what's coming down with these earthquakes. And it is beyond belief. Level 9 earthquakes, they are predictable. But then you have the President of the United States says they are not predictable. That lying President of the United States should be out of there.
Mr. LaRouche, I want to expand on that because I did notice months ago you were writing about an increase in earthquakes and tectonic events even before what we saw unfold on the eastern coast of Japan. And I did notice 2 weeks before the March 11th event, even ABC News said, well, the giant moon, the moon closer than it had been in 20 years, doesn't just manipulate the tides of the oceans of the planet, but also the magma that these floating continents are on top of. And I am seeing a lot of mainline astrophysicists like Piers Corbin, very highly respected out of England. He said no doubt that the solar cycle, that when that earthquake happened, that 9.1, they now upgraded it, that a solar flares, ionizing radiation, hit the Earth 2 hours before, coinciding with the, quote, giant moon, the moon being closer than it had been in 20 years, and that's what triggered it. And I have read some of the astrophysicists with this larger a galactic plane that we're passing through. That's a little too technical in my research, but undoubtedly the moon manipulates and the sun manipulates climate and tectonic and magnetic fields. And I know that Obama's canceled some satellites can measure all over the world the rising and falling of tectonic events.